out pastors and others to certain types of church leadership. But we're severely limiting God's power when we buy into the lie that since God hasn't necessarily chosen and ordained someone in that way, that he doesn't have a special ministry for them. Not too long ago, I was in a meeting in Atlanta at the North American Mission Board where I work, and it was a meeting between several of us who have a ministry throughout the United States and several seminary professors. And we got to talking, as some of us guys will sometimes do, about big theological issues. And somehow the question of ordination came up. Who should or should not be formally ordained into the gospel ministry? Well, Dr. Rick Durst, who is the academic dean at Golden Gate Seminary, made a really interesting statement. He said, I think we spend way too much time arguing and fussing about who should or should not be formally ordained into the gospel ministry, and we don't spend nearly enough time telling all God's children that they have been ordained to a ministry. He said, I think we need to spend more time talking about the ordination we receive at our salvation and at baptism. And after we got through this meeting, I talked with Dr. Durst to make sure I understood what it was that he was saying. And really what he said was that we have missed the boat in Southern Baptist life whenever we don't make sure that every one of God's children knows that God has a ministry for them, that we've all been called to service, that we've all been called to servanthood, to discipleship, and to ministry. And it's that basic idea and what we can do about it on a real practical basis that brings me here tonight. I've got a 9-minute video that I want to show you guys that describes in better detail than I could just standing here and talking what tent-making ministry through the North American Mission Board is all about. And I'd like to show you that video right now.
The World Today, Dateline Alpharetta, Georgia, where volumes of volunteers are queuing up at the offices of the Home Mission Board, putting their John Hancocks on the dotted line and saying, sign me up for a life of ministry. But these leaders of tomorrow won't be paid to be behind the pulpit. No, sir. With all its modern conveniences, our world today is changing. And these fresh-faced recruits are prepared to meet those changes head-on. They'll be fanning out all across our nation to the playgrounds and the factories of America. In this workaday world of ours, God is calling these leaders of tomorrow to be doctors, teachers, welders, and a whole variety of other jobs from A to Z. And by answering that call, Southern Baptists will surely make this nation a brighter, better, holier place for us all.
Michael W. Smith is singing lightly in the background. The notes for her test tomorrow are sitting in front of her, but Carrie Ballou's mind is elsewhere. With only one semester left at Oklahoma Baptist University, she has no idea what to do after graduation. But tomorrow begins Home Missions Week at OBU, and the emphasis is tent making. She's not exactly sure what that is, but when you're this close to graduation, any opportunity can catch your eye.
It is hard to not know where I'm going to be. So I anxiously been awaiting this week. I want God to break my heart for his people. What is my unique place in this world as a Christian, as a missionary? So I'm hoping to, definitely for some direction.
Just an hour later, and Carrie's where she is every Wednesday night, front row at the BSU praise service. Home Missions Week begins now, and if Carrie's looking for direction here, she'll have to get it from a man whose ideas sound strange to her, a man named Bob Briner.
In exactly the same way that China is a mission field or India is a mission field, Hollywood is a mission field.
Bob is a broadcaster who wrote a book about how Christians should get out of the church pews and into the workplace.
We need to think about all areas of life as mission fields. In their home churches, missionaries have been held up and put on a pedestal, which is nothing wrong with that. But we don't see that anywhere in Scripture, that there is a professional class of Christians, and then all the rest of us are spear carriers or supporters or applauders at an event, you know, that kind of thing.
Carrie will hear those ideas repeated for the next several days. They will acquire names like Tent Maker and Mission Service Corps. And before she knows it, they will become part of who she is and who she plans to be.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about my personal story so you can see how it worked out for one guy in one way.
Last night, ideas. Today, Carrie hears about the brass tacks from a man named Mike Harris.
One of the things that has built our business is praying.
Mike's a Mission Service Corps missionary like 2,200 other Southern Baptists who do volunteer missions full-time. He's also a tent maker, which means he holds a secular job to support his family and put him in position to do ministry. In his case, starting a church in Colorado Springs.
I think God calls you where you're gifted and where you're passionate.
He's come to tell students like Carrie that if he and his wife can do it, so can they.
Does that make sense to you?
There's like 2,300 or more people that are in the pipeline and going out to do stuff like that. You know, I'd always thought you had to be, you know, a missionary, you know, appointed by the Home Mission Board or, you know, or a foreign missionary in Uganda or someplace. And I mean, there are people doing everything.
After class with Mike, Carrie's normal routine goes on. But that's all that's normal about Carrie's day now. She works part-time at a local pharmacy, and until this morning, hadn't imagined herself as a missionary behind a pharmacy counter.
Okay. The thing is about a pharmacy job is people are coming to you with needs. They're coming sick. They're not feeling good. You know, they need your care. And that excites me because you're needed.
Give me an A!
A!
We have needs right now for assistant pastors.
This is what Carrie has been waiting for months. 2 days of intense information.
There are people who have ministries to every group of people.
Carl Barrington, Associate Director of Mission Service Corps at the Home Mission Board, starts off OBU's Tent Maker Weekend with an alphabet of opportunities.
Give me a T!
T!
That's good. Teachers need it.
Most of them offer no salary, and all of them reflect changing times.
Well, the traditional paradigm says, oh, let's bring in a professional to do it. We will pay him or her a full-time salary. We will have a big, nice church building for them to have an office in, and they'll be able to devote 60 hours a week just to doing that ministry, and all of a sudden you realize you've just spent $500,000 on one church, and maybe you don't have half of that to do all of your ministry in the whole city for a whole year.
Carrie's search for direction may very well end right here. No longer confused, it's as if Mike Harris yesterday and Carl Barrington today are reading her mind and her heart.
Not enough people up to now have been willing to say, God, I'll go wherever you want me to go, do whatever you want me to do, and I don't care who signs my paycheck.
I struggled with that for a long time, and it's not even something I want to do, is to be a paid pastor, a full-time vocational pastor or youth worker or whatever.
Very affluent area.
I just know that there are so many areas that they do not have any Christians there to help with the children, help with the youth, help with the college students on the campus, help with music. They need people.
It's a vast, vast, vast area, New England is.
Without knowing it, Carrie has just described Ignatius Mimaris' home of Boston, Massachusetts.
So we can go and pray.
Ignatius is the director of missions in Boston, and he's here today because he needs tent makers and Mission Service Corps missionaries.
We need people like this.
And as Carrie hears what he has to say, it seems Boston's needs fit her gifts.
So that gives you kind of a contrast. You know?
I have never thought of Boston. I knew absolutely nothing about the area. I have a great need for ministers, self-supported ministers. And the needs that they have, my experiences in my heart very well could supply, could meet those needs there.
And I have a lot of music experience, guitar, and I like building relationships with people. I like teaching, discipling. With my religion major, I have a lot of Bible knowledge.
The conference is officially over. But Carrie isn't ready for it to end just yet.
We definitely need people who have some musical talent.
Her search for direction may very well end right here, with a one-way ticket to Boston and a career as a tent maker.
Somebody comes in and plays music, even for the little time that they're there, things kind of flare up.
This week, this whole week, through the speakers and then through this last night and today, God opened my eyes again and gave me a greater vision for his world that he wants to reach. And that the methods of reaching it are changing. And he is showing me how he has prepared me to reach his world in the way that it needs to be reached, to reach people where they are. The speakers this week have shared so many different things. I didn't know a week ago exactly how that was, but to now know the needs out there and realize, wow, all this time I've been having these experiences and these desires, and they fit in. They match. I've been talking to Ignatius about Boston, incredible need up there. So that is definitely an option that I'll be looking into. It's neat to see God doing something, preparing me for his work, and then all of a sudden finding out possibly what it could be, and it's amazing.
In the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, and he heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send?" And Isaiah said, "Here am I, send me." And the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah, saying, "Before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you, and I ordained you to be a prophet unto the nations." And Jeremiah said, "Oh Lord God, I cannot speak, for I'm just a young person." And the Lord said to him, "Don't be afraid, for I have put my words in your mouth." And Saul fell to the ground, and he heard a voice saying unto him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And Saul replied, "Who are you, Lord?" And the Lord said, "I am Jesus, whom you persecute." And trembling, Saul said, "What would you have me to do?" And the Lord said, "Get up and go, and it will be revealed unto you what you should do." And a short time later, the Lord spoke to Ananias and said, "Saul is my chosen vessel to bear my name before the Gentiles and the kings and the children of Israel." Now, what I've just done is share with you probably the three most dynamic call experiences to be found anywhere in Scripture. And probably, if we're honest, I doubt if any of us here this evening have experienced anything quite like this. But does it really matter if you've had that sort of ta-da experience with God or not? No. The only thing that matters is, do you understand what it means to be called of God? You see, I think you can make a great case in Scripture that even though you may have never thought about it this way, God has called each one of us. And during our lifetime, he calls us four times. First of all, he calls us to be his child. And secondly, immediately after we understand what it means to be God's child, we start to understand that God has called us to a ministry life. And thirdly, God calls us to a specific place, at a specific time, at different times in our life, to do the ministry that he has called us to do for him. And there's a fourth call too, but I'm going to talk about it in a few minutes. Now, all four of these calls are very valuable, and I believe their value comes in the order in which they occur. The first call is the call into the family of God. Paul spoke a lot about his call to be an apostle of God, but more so than that, he remembered his call to be God's child. He was initially called to be a follower of Christ, and everything else he was ever able to accomplish in his life and his ministry came forth from that initial basic call to be the child of God. You remember, during his life, Paul had to go through a tremendous amount of persecution. They tried to stone him to death. He was shipwrecked, almost died on several occasions. But when Paul got in trouble, it wasn't his call to be an evangelist or his call to be an apostle or his call to be a church planter that he came back to. First and foremost, Paul remembered his call to be a child of the King. And that's what gives our lives real value. That's the basic of who we are. Now, the second call, which immediately follows the first, even though sometimes we're kind of dense and we don't catch on to it really quickly, is the call to be God's minister in the truest sense of the word. If you think back to history, Say back in the time when there were real kings ruling England and France and places like that. There were people who worked for the kings of those countries who had the title like the minister of the king. Now, if you go back 250 years and you're in the throne room of King George III in England, and he says, "Bring me my minister," someone would come in there and he'd say, "I have a job for you. I want you to go see Louis XVI over in France, and you tell him that if he does not call off his navy, then we will be at war." Now, if you're the king's minister, you have the absolute responsibility to do several things. One, you can't say no to the king's call. Secondly, you can't change the message that the king has given you. And even though maybe you're afraid of what's going to happen to you when you go to that foreign country and give that message, you have taken an oath of loyalty to your king. So you go and you do it because of previous decisions that you've made. And you know what? To be a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ means almost exactly the same thing. You have agreed to respond whenever the king calls you. You have agreed to take the gospel, his message that he has told you about, to a lost and dying world. You don't have the right to change any of it. You don't have the right to dilute it. You don't have the right to keep quiet if you're truly going to be the minister that God has called you to do. Basically, at this point, the call to ministry means a call to discipleship, to being serious about what God would have you to do in a general sense with your life. Then there's that third call to ministry. Now, boy, this one varies tremendously. At different times in your life, you're going to be doing different specific things in kingdom service. It was 23 years ago, when I was a sophomore here at OU, that I felt God calling me, in my particular sense, to serve him vocationally. And I made the plans to go that route. I went to seminary and I got my seminary degrees and I got a PhD and all of these kinds of things. At different times during my life in ministry, I've been a pastor. I've been a minister of music and youth and education and college students. I've taught at the seminary. I've been an administrator. Now I work for the denomination. And you know what? 23 years ago, I could not have had a clue that God was going to do those things through me in my life. I've heard it said that if your life is a book, God reveals to you about a paragraph at a time. I know that's been that way in my life, and very seldom have I known the next step that God was going to take in my life until just shortly before he was ready to call me to that way and use me that way. Now, in every situation now, after the fact, I can see why God did it the way he did. Some of y'all may remember, in Genesis chapter 50, there's a real interesting passage when Old Testament Joseph is confronted by his brothers. Now, the old man has just died, and the brothers, they are scared. They're scared that Joseph, who they've done wrong throughout most of their whole life, is going to take revenge on them now that the father is dead and there's no one that he is accountable to. But Joseph's response to their fear in coming to him, instead of him saying, "Ha, ha, 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 it's time now, guys, you're going to get your just rewards," instead he said to them, no, you don't understand. You intended it for evil. You intended it to hurt me, but God was able to use it for good. And now at this point in my life, I can see why he allowed the things to happen to me. The education that I've received, the work that I've done, even the bad things, I can see that all of those things work together to make me the man that God has called me to be so that I can save my family now, so that I can save the people of Egypt from starvation. You intended it for evil, God brought it about to be good. Now I can promise you from personal experience, at some points along the line in your life, you're going to have those aha moments, just like Joseph did. You know what an aha moment is? If you're watching a cartoon, it's whenever the light bulb goes off over the person's head. And in your life, it's going to be whenever you can see why all of these seemingly different and disparate things that are happening to you, how God brings them all together if you are in the center of his will. And he uniquely equips you and places you in a place that he can use you now. It's very rare for anybody to be in the same physical place doing exactly the same ministry from the time they're 21 years old until the time God calls them home. It doesn't happen real often. It does occasionally, but not real often. But the key thing to remember is, even if you don't understand right now, even if you have questions, if you're like Carrie Ballou, the girl in the film right there, she's a senior in college. She doesn't know exactly what God is calling her to do. But through the opportunities to learn about what God is doing in the world, learning about all the hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of places he's at work where he can use people as, in her cases as she talks about it, as a tent maker. Just like the Apostle Paul made tents to support his ministry, a tent maker in the modern sense is someone who does whatever they know how to do for a living to financially support themselves so they can go wherever God calls them to go, do whatever God calls them to do in whatever place, and not have to worry about their financial support coming from that place of ministry. As was made clear in the film, we have over 2,300 home missionaries, many of them in their late teens and early 20s. People sometimes coming right out of high school, a lot of people coming right out of college, who are willing to take hold of a brand new idea and say, God, I know you've called me to be a teacher, you've called me to be a computer scientist, you've called me to be a doctor, you've called me to be an attorney, and that's what I'm supposed to do to make my living. But God, I'm starting to believe that maybe you're showing me how I can use my vocation to both have a great opportunity for ministry where I work, as well as allowing that to let me go where there are not finances to support traditional ministries, so that I can go be part of starting a new church, so that I can be a part of doing something brand new and something exciting that would not be done in any other way. About a year ago, I was on campus at William Carey College in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, doing exactly what I'm doing right now. I was leading a conference just like the one we're going to have tomorrow night and Saturday morning called Innovative Ministries for the 21st Century. The whole idea of this conference is to show people how they can use their college degrees to get a job after they graduate and support themselves and do ministry in that same way. Well, there's a young lady sitting in the audience. Her name is Kim South. Kim is a senior at William Carey, getting a degree in secondary education. I could tell I had her attention all the time I was talking about all these things. I was sharing with her about the needs that existed in Los Angeles, how we need to start new churches in Los Angeles, and how there are needs for Christians in the public school system in Los Angeles. And through an organization that we have called the Tentmaker Vocational Network, we can help her get a job teaching school in L.A. so she can be part of the ministry. And she just listened to me. And the conference ended about 9:30, but she wanted to stay and talk. And we talked and talked and talked. Finally, about midnight, I said, Kim, you got to go home. She went home, she called her mom and dad, woke them up in the middle of the night and said, Mom, Dad, nothing's wrong, but I just had to call you. I believe tonight God has revealed to me what I'm supposed to be doing for the rest of my life. Well, about 4 months later, Kim was visiting in L.A. She had job interviews, interviewed at four different school districts. She got job offers at all four places. One of them was a real nice, suburban, sort of brand new, cushy school, but Kim didn't feel led to go there. She accepted a position teaching school in South Central Los Angeles at Thomas Jefferson High School. There were 42 kids in Kim's graduating class at Tishomingo, Mississippi High School. There are 4,800 students at Thomas Jefferson High School in Los Angeles. Kim is an Anglo girl from a small town in Mississippi, and she's now living and teaching in a county of 9 million people in a school system that's about 92% Hispanic, 5% African American, and there are 3 Anglo kids in the whole student body. On her first day of her first week ever teaching school, a girl comes to her and says, Miss, I have a question for you. You're a science teacher, right? Kim says, yeah. She said, well, I have a question for you. She said, I'm pregnant, and I think I want to get an abortion. Can you tell me what all is involved with that? And Kim kind of, in about a half a second's time, she kind of gulps and thinks, okay, this is science, and this is morality. I can deal with both of those. So she just talked to the girl, told her the truth, that her little three-month baby in her womb had fingers and toes and a developing brain and a beating heart, and the girl just started crying. Someone else had told her it was just like a little bean or something. It didn't really amount to anything. Just get rid of it. Just get rid of it. And Kim was able to make a difference in that young lady's life on her first day. On Wednesday of her first week ever at teaching public high school, a kid comes up to her at the end of the day and says, Miss South, so-and-so tells me you're a Christian. Is that right? She said, yeah, that's right. He said, well, I got a question for you. He said, there's this guy. See, he's not my real dad. I never knew who my real dad was. But he's been good to me. He takes me places. He goes to my soccer games with me. Miss South, he was murdered last night. How could that God you believe in let something like that happen? Gulp. What do you say? Kim gave a great answer. I think a very wise answer. She said, Raul, I can't completely answer your question, but I can tell you this. Maybe God let your friend come into your life for a while to show you that not all guys are like your dad and take off. Maybe God let him come into your life for a while to show you what it's like to be a real man. Great answer. Praise the Lord for Kim South in that school system. And then on Friday of her first week ever of teaching school, the kid that had been the biggest pain to her the whole week, she'd given him detention, he's scrubbing off the desk, it's Friday afternoon, everybody else has gone home. The way she describes him, big, tough kid, shaved head, tattoos, body piercing, you know, the whole route. And he's making conversation with her, and he says, "Hey, so Miss South said you're new to L.A., right?" She said, "Yeah, that's right." He said, "Well, what do you do on the weekends? You know, what kind of clubs you go through? You go bar hopping? What do you do?" She said, "Well, you know, actually," she said, I don't do those things. I made some lifestyle decisions that I don't participate in a lot of the things you just mentioned there." He said, "What are you, some kind of a Christian or something?" And she said, "Well, yes, actually I am." And the kid just stopped. He says, "So, you're a Christian?" He said, "I've never had one that would talk to me before." He said, "I'm gay." He said, "Every time I tell people that, they run away and hide." And she said, "I'll talk to you. What do you want to talk about?" He said, "Really?" He said, "I've always wondered." And then he proceeds to ask her this complicated theological question. Something just really in depth. He's never had anybody ask that question to before. Well, Kim answers the question the best that she can. It's Friday. She goes home. She does personal Bible study. She looks up the answer the best she can. On Monday, she comes back and gives a better answer. He's got another question. And she told me that almost her whole first semester personal Bible study is spent in looking up answers to this kid's questions that she's never had anybody to ask before. But that's not all. You see, Kim is out there. She's having a tremendous impact, one of the few evangelical Christian teachers in her particular high school. But that's not all. She's making a living and she's making an impact, but guess what else she's doing? How many of you have heard of this little-known guy called the artist formerly known as Prince? Okay? He fits into this story, believe it or not. Kim's ministry, in addition to the school, is through a church that some of you may know something about. It's called the Church on Brady. It's in East Los Angeles. It's a great, great church. Just probably the best mixed ethnic church I've ever been in my whole life. Just everybody working together, not caring about the things that usually tend to divide people. Well, Kim and about three or four other lay church planters went to downtown Los Angeles with their pastor, Irwin McManus, and they went to a nightclub owned by formerly Prince, and they went to the manager of that club and they said to him, "You know, we wanted to talk to you. We believe God is leading us to start a brand new church right here in the heart of downtown Los Angeles, and we want to have it meet in your club." Think about it. Until they do this church, the only evangelical church in that particular part of downtown L.A. are rescue missions and so on. But a lot of yuppie tops are moving back into downtown L.A. They're tired of three-hour commutes. They want to get back downtown. So they tell him the whole story. They don't hold anything back. And here's the guy's response. He says, "You know, I don't believe everything that you guys believe, but," he says, "I like what you're talking about here. I think it'd be good for the city. I'll tell you what I'll do. Usually I charge anybody that wants to use the club $1,000 per use. For you, I'll charge $250. He says, "Usually I charge people for parking. Anybody that comes to church here can park for free. See the marquee out in front where we advertise our bands?" He says, "Just put anything up there you want to on Sunday and take it down and put my sign back up and you can use that." So for $250 a week, which is a pittance compared to what it usually costs to start a church, we're going to have a brand new evangelical church in the heart of downtown Los Angeles, staffed primarily by lay Christians who are following God's will and doing whatever He has called them to do. I talked with Kim yesterday. This church started in January. Guess how many were there last Sunday? 145 people. Isn't that amazing? And this has all come about with one young lady who listened to God whenever He said, "Hey, you're a school teacher. You can teach school in Los Angeles just as easily as you can in Jackson, Mississippi. You can teach school in Los Angeles just as easily as you can in Oklahoma City or Dallas or Atlanta or Houston or any place where we have lots of evangelical churches already." You see, God is about some brand new things. As we get ready to jump into the new millennium, as we spend most of our life in ministry in the 21st century, we're seeing that God is doing some old things in some brand new ways. Think about it. Why could not God use you to take your degree in nursing? Instead of getting a job in Tulsa, get a job in nursing in Chicago and become a part of the Chicago lifestyle. You could become a part of, you could start a BSU on one of over 40 campuses in the Chicagoland area that have no Baptist student work of any kind. How about computer science? You're getting a degree in computer science. Take your degree, instead of going to Oklahoma City, go to Boston. Get a job in computer science field in Boston, and you could become a volunteer youth minister in one of over 100 churches in the Boston area that have no organized youth ministry program of any kind. Or maybe, just maybe, God might could call you and use you in one of the world's great foreign mission fields, New York City. I'm serious. I spend about 3 days a month in New York. About half of the people that you meet on the street do not speak English as their first language. It's more like going to a foreign country than in many foreign countries. What if God used you to take your accounting degree and instead of getting a job in Dallas, going to New York, letting us help you get a job through the Tentmaker Vocational Network, because one of our guys in New York is the National Human Resources Manager for Ernst & Young, one of the biggest accounting companies in the world. And we have people in major cities throughout the northern and western United States who, they don't promise jobs, but they promise help. Maybe interviews, maybe suggestions on how to go about getting a job in your area, in their city. Over the last year and a half, I've spent a lot of time with the directors of missions in a lot of our great cities, in places like Boston and New York and Detroit. And just a couple of weeks ago, on three consecutive nights, I was in Seattle and Spokane and Portland. And I've been in Los Angeles. And our goal is to develop networks of people in every major city in the northern and western halves of the United States who can help tent makers go in, get a job in their field, and make a difference. What if God called you to go to New York and get a job in your field? You could be a part of helping one of our churches in New York City. To show you how different things are in New York versus other parts of the country, let me give you these numbers. In Metro New York Association, an area that's about 75 miles wide and about 60 miles north to south, you have, by most people's estimates, between 20 and 22 million people that live in that area, plus probably a lot of other people who don't make it on the census books. We have in that whole big area 214 mostly small churches and missions. The total budget of all 214 of those churches for 1 year is almost exactly the same as the one-year budget for First Baptist Church, Dallas, Texas. 214 churches, average budget of about $30,000 per year. 80% of the pastors are bivocational. They're working a job in the community, making a living, doing what they can. 8 out of 10 people you'd meet in a Southern Baptist church in New York City are not Anglo. We are the most diverse group you can imagine. It's so different, especially once you get outside the South Central and Southeastern United States, to see the diversity of people that God is bringing together. And the only way that we will reach lots of people that we're not reaching with the traditional means of starting churches, which is buying land and building buildings and relying only on fully salaried, seminary-educated leadership to provide all of the work. By the time you do that, you've sunk hundreds of thousands of dollars into a place. Why not take the resource that we have, and that's our people? People like Kim South, who was willing to go from an itty-bitty little town in Mississippi to 9 million population in Los Angeles County, to realize that, yes, God was calling her to be a teacher, but she could get a job teaching there as easily as anywhere else and be a part of something brand new. God is doing new things in a new way. A lot of people, especially young people, are realizing that God may be calling them to be tent makers, i.e., getting a job in your field, making your living that way, or he may be calling you to raise your financial support so that you can go somewhere and really make a difference.